Red Ice Creations Radio. This is Henrik Palmgren coming to you from a stormy Västra Götaland in Sweden. New or regular listeners, welcome. Nice to have you with us. As you know, the website is redicecreations.com. That's our home on the web for our radio archives, our member section, and our frequently updated news section, and a whole lot more. And we are here twice a week on Thursdays and Sundays. And you can, of course, enjoy all of our extended interviews with many of our guests if you are a subscriber to our website. We are also very soon going to do our first live program. That's going to be a lot of fun trying that out. So do stay tuned. Soon we'll have much more information about this up on redicecreations.com. Okay, today we are going to talk biblical prophecy, the Garden of Eden, 666, the Antichrist, and a whole lot more. With us on the line we have Dr. Joyce Jeffries-Pugh. She is the author to Eden, The Knowledge of Good and Evil, 666, and also Antichrist, the cloned image of Jesus Christ. Joy has been involved in researching biblical prophecy for about 30 years. Joyce consults with people from around the world on various issues and current events involving science and religion. She also serves as a consultant in education with MUFON regarding the spiritual and religious aspects of paranormal and UFO experiences. And today we're going to focus and talk about her books, her research, and findings here. Her website, by the way, is drjoye.com. That's drjoye.com. And there you can find contact information, a short bio, and links to the books that we'll be discussing here today. So let's say hi to our guest. Welcome, Dr. Joy. Thanks for coming on the program.
Thank you. I'm so excited about being your guest today.
Excellent. It's nice to have you here. How are things down in Georgia?
Well, we're really happy because we are starting to get some rain that we desperately needed. We have been so very dry that we've never seen this type of climate, really, with no, with no rain for days and days on end. So it's kind of exciting when we see a drop of rain in our area, because we really are getting to a point that if we had not started seeing some rain, that there would have been major rationing of water in our area.
Really? Have you had that any time before, previously?
Never. And, you know, in all the years, and I've been on this earth about 51 years now, but all the years that I've been in this area, and this has always been my home, you know, in Georgia, we have never seen ponds go completely dry. I mean, lose every ounce, all the fish die, everything. It's been really very severe for about the last 2 years.
Well, let me tell you, I think we've been stealing some of your rain up here, because we have had nothing but, probably going back 2 months or something like that. You would imagine that perhaps that Sweden would be, you know, very snowy and a lot of ice and so forth by now, but we've just had rain all the time, you know.
Well, it's almost like there has been a major shift in our climate, and you know, that has a lot to do with, I guess, some of the things that we'll be talking about today, Henrik, is that there are some very unusual climatic changes that are occurring, and it's something I think that most people hear in the news, that it's, you know, it's really like global warming, and that it's being blamed some on, you know, the human population.
Yeah.
But I really, in my studies and in my research, I'm really going to prove, you know, that what we're seeing is really a part of end time prophecy, and that if it were anything like humans causing the problem, I think that you see, if you do the research about Mars, and even with the polar caps there that have melted and the climate change that's happening there, where there are no supposed human populations, then you have to wonder if there is not something major happening universally in our particular galaxy.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the kind of undercurrent, the counter idea towards the more popular one about global warming, and that it's, you know, humans who's causing that, is of course that this is because of changes in the sun and so forth, that the things are going on in our solar system, basically. What's your take on that? Do you see a whole another reason for this, or what's your take on that?
Well, it's like, I, of course, my my research is really based on biblical scripture. I do bring in a lot of the other kinds of literature that do present itself into that same, I guess, mind frame. But, you know, the book of Revelation especially tells us that there's going to be major signs in the moon, sun, stars, that kind of thing. And we are just really, I think, seeing some of this starting to happen with the changes in the sun. And, you know, anyone that can go to a website and watch the sun 24/7 like we have available now on the website, you can see the amount of sun flares that are occurring and the intensity of those sun flares, which started only just a couple of years ago with some really magnificent flares that had never been recorded such in history. So if we see that, and then we see things like the near asteroid that just came within, 1.4 lunar lengths?
Something like that.
The other night, mm-hmm. You know, and that we are actually entering into a center part of the Milky Way galaxy, which, of course, the Mayan prophecies of 2012 that I talk about in my research, you can't just kind of laugh it off and say, well, oh, this is a coincidence, because there's too much of it happening mm-hmm. at a set kind of time. And then if you do the research and you realize that these were things that were already talked about and already written about, then you can't laugh it off and say it's a coincidence. It's just too much of it. It's too many things at the same time to be a coincidence. And, of course, the Mayan prophecies. And then there are other prophecies, you know, that are out there with the rattlesnake constellation prophecies, Indian kind of prophecies, that kind of thing that also connect all this together. So my research tries to show you that actually the times that we live in right now are really already etched out in some kind of history, and where it has always been said, well, maybe, you know, it was just somebody's thought. Well, all these people in all these different places at all these different time periods could not have formulated, you know, on an internet together and came up with the same idea. So it tells me that there was an ongoing plan that someone brought through history that tells us that there is a time frame for things. Mm-hmm. And a time frame, I mean time frame, if we look at the Earth as a time frame, which we have our own time based by the, you know, revelations of the Earth against the sun, it's maybe a different time frame than non-time, you know, out in space or whatever. But for the Earth, there was a time frame. And I believe that that time frame really got its start in the Garden of Eden, and that is why my research started out in the Garden of Eden and tries to help the reader understand how important Eden was. And I even say in my work that in the beginning, the end was in the apple. The moment that we became knowledgeable by eating of the tree of good and evil, we, right there was an end that was set.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that there has been a parallel history that has run from the Garden of Eden all the way to present day, and which will finally, you know, finalize itself in what I believe will be around starting in 2012 and then move itself to about 2018, 2019.
Hmm.
And basing that on the 7 years of tribulation following the 2012 time period.
Right.
But it's one of those things that, as I have done the research for so many years, and I tell people that, you know, when I first started doing this, I actually had a strange dream when I was 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I was born and raised, and I went to church, you know, the week after I was born. So yes, I was accustomed to, you know, being in a religious atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And at 6 years of age, I think it's very strange, because I grew up in a time when television, we had like one channel back in those days, black and white channel TV.
Yeah.
And, you know, this kind of shows that we had were like Lassie and fun little things. You didn't see anything that would be like, I would say, like gruesome like we have today in movie theaters. But my dream particularly woke me up afterwards, and it was just so frightening. It was so absolutely devastating of what I saw. And so once I had that, and I felt that I had been in the presence of what I felt was Jesus at the end of that particular dream, I wanted to know more about what the end of time was like, and I would ask questions, and nobody really could answer those questions for me, and it was very upsetting as a young person trying to find answers, because I lived in a small South Georgia town, and the little library, let me just say, was a little library, and you know, your textbooks could be like several 10 years old, you know, things like that. They
were
major up to date, but then, of course, we didn't have the technology that we have today.
Yeah.
And as time went on, I was able to start accumulating information, and by the time I reached 13 years of age and really read through the book of Revelations, there was just something about that. I'm like, I have seen this happen. In my mind, I was just so engrossed in that. And so from that point on, all through college, my idea, my underlying thing was trying to find out what is it that will bring masses of people together to worship an individual that's promised to come at the end of time, that supposedly will be the savior of mankind, so to say.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like I say, my research kind of starts there in Eden and explains how that parallel history has gone through. And I take you, just like I began placing these pieces together, and now, interesting enough, where I may be able to find two or three pieces to this particular puzzle, you know, 20 or 30 years ago,
mm-hmm.
now I find pieces to the puzzle daily. I mean, and there is so much that fits into the puzzle that it takes me almost 24/7. I spend very late nights, you know, trying to get it all together.
But
absolutely amazing. And it really follows what the Bible told us that would happen, that in the end times that it would become like, you know, knowledge would increase, and it would become like a woman in labor, and that those pains get closer and closer and closer together.
Mm-hmm.
And in my research, I see that on a daily basis, in so much that it's absolutely mind-boggling how it's all coming together. And it's a magnificent plan with two very unique characters, one for good and one for bad. And so my research shows you the history of the one that I believe was Lucifer, that of course was created in the beginning as the number one angel, and his battle against the Creator. And I explain to you how what we go through as humans, we do not realize how precious we are and how important our souls are in this battle. And so hopefully, you know, by taking a reader through what I've put together, it will help them not have to go to 1,000 other books. They can pick up one book, and I try to hit on a lot of different topics.
Right.
And actually topics that most, what I would say, traditional Christian books do not touch on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the reason I did that is because I feel that my role in this is a restorer to the understanding of what happened. I'm not really writing this book for one particular group of people. It's actually for anybody out there who is seeking to understand the relationship between science and technology and religion.
Hmm.
And that is what I'm trying to restore, is the understanding of that. And, of course, most people say, well, how in the world, you know, science and religion have always been at such odds with each other. But I think that my research is an attempt to show you how science and religion began and how science and religion is going to end it all.
Hmm. Very interesting.
So it's very detailed. Mm-hmm. 182 pages. And it took me 7 years of working on this research, almost night and day.
There we go.
To get all these things together. Because, like I say, I had to touch on a lot of different things that traditionally Christianity does not touch on. And most Christians, very few, decide to ever read the esoteric or the Gnostic kind of gospels to understand what is going on the other side of the fence.
So what other sources? Obviously you're you know, very well versed in the Bible and so forth, but what other sources have you been looking at for the book?
Well, you know, I went to very deep understanding of what Gnosticism is, and the actual capability of an alchemist. That particular, a part of that interested me because I had such a keen interest in how Satan would ever manifest himself at the end of time as the savior of mankind. And knowing that, you know, in Genesis, that it talks about that that Satan really only had what was 9 stones, and I knew that the priest wore the breastplates of 12 stones.
Mm-hmm, sure.
They went into the Ark of the Covenant and had a relationship with God. They had to have that breastplate with 12 stones. There's something very important about this 12 stones, and when you understand that Satan or Lucifer was missing 3 of those stones, there was something different about Lucifer. So that tells me that he did not have all the capability of God the Creator.
Hmm.
And when God created us as in his image, then it was for the angels to really be a part of us and maybe oversee or whatever. And Satan really, or Lucifer, did not want to be second fiddle to humans. I mean, that it was his jealousy point of not being maybe first in God's eyes. I think that he is different, that angels do not look human, although I do believe they can shape shift. But I don't think that they, it's kind of like if you and I dress up for Halloween and we pretend we're something.
Mm.
When the costume comes off, you know, we're still what we are.
Mm-hmm.
We're still human.
Sure.
So I think that there was a lot of anxiety about wanting to be like first in God's eyes. And when he realized he was not, and he was going to have to play second fiddle to human beings, then I think the whole intent was to destroy humanity, and that's why he's always been our accuser and our, you know, he's always been the one that's trying to make us look like the bad guys.
Hmm.
So, you know, in my book, I try to show you that how could it be that this man, or this being, let me say, that talked to Eve, Adam and Eve in the garden, we know that they were there, they physically, you know, were talking to him like you and I are talking, and he did offer them the fruit that was absolutely forbidden. But because he only had those 9 stones, I don't believe that he can create. He has power to do things, but I don't think he has power for creation.
Hmm.
And so I was like, well, how could it be that at the end of time, if he doesn't have these necessary stones for what I believe creation, how is it that he's going to be able to manifest himself in a body? Because we know that in Genesis, when God created man in his image, he blew into his nostrils the breath of life.
Hmm.
And it was like a nesma. It was like a living soul. And I believe that in itself is what is the spiritual part of us that leaves our body when we die.
Okay. Mm.
Okay?
Mm.
And so if we have, of course, through the research, I have tried to look at how is it that Satan possesses people? But when you do the research, and I've done very much research into the Catholic Church and to exorcists that are trained in removing demonic beings,
mm-hmm.
We also know that when Jesus, his first thing that he did that's recorded in the Bible was to drive out a demon. And so he taught, you know, people say, well, you know, they don't want to believe in demons. And I'm like, okay, well, if you want to believe in the Bible, you have to believe that there are demons because Jesus talked to that demon.
Mm-hmm.
He brought it out of that person. And the demons actually talked back to Jesus, you know, and wanted to know why he had come before the time. And, of course, I believe what they were saying is that you're not supposed to be here yet. And so they already knew that there was a timeline established.
Mm-hmm.
And even the demons knew Jesus when his own people, you know, the Jewish people, didn't even recognize him as Messiah. So, you know, the fact that the demons were here and that they were involved and they were within people and could be brought out of people, I'm like, well, if Satan wants to manifest himself as a human being at the end of time, and this 666, this man of 666 that's talked about in the book of Revelation,
yeah.
I'm like, how could it be that he could ever, like, take over your body or my body? Because we have that soul, that spirit that is within us. And yes, he might can pull it out through whatever means, and I do show, you know, that could be done through the pineal gland and through certain kinds of things, but at any moment, our spirit can return either through the exorcism or our choice or whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So if he was inhabiting our body and we decided all of a sudden, well, I don't like this anymore and I have a will to choose God, just like the thief on the cross at the last moment, even though he'd been a bad guy, you know, he said, you know, remember me when you come into your kingdom, and he said, this day you'll be in paradise. So, I mean, you had that chance to change as long as, you know, up to your death. And so I thought, well, that's not going to work, because Satan has got to be able to manipulate and handle a body without the threat of the soul ever returning. So, you know, then I became interested in how that could happen. And that's where my interest, you know, began with alchemy and how it goes back really into the lineage of Cain.
Really?
And how some of the documentation that came out of the flood that I feel was that is mentioned in different like the Epic of Gilgamesh.
Sure.
And the fact that there was an ark, that there was Zoroastra who had put on that particular ark some seeds and some tablets that I believe were hidden mysteries and hidden sciences that were very well known prior to the great days before the flood.
Okay.
And I believe that those tablets were on that ark, and that it sank at the bottom of Ariat, that it was at the bottom of Ariat. And when Ham, the son of Noah, who I believe was the weakest link in the trilogy of Ham's three sons, that when he came down the mountain after being cursed by his father for an act that I do believe had something to do with a sexual situation, again, just like in the Garden of Eden, it seems like there are things that are tied together with the sexual sins, that he found those tablatures, and he was part of the sages that came into Samaria and taught the Sumerians total civilization and built that around the what I call fallen angels theology or Luciferian theology. And being able to tie back the Gnostic connections to those particular sacred mysteries and sciences, then I was able to see that there was one theme running the whole time, even in the Epic of Gilgamesh, was that Gilgamesh wanted to live forever in the flesh, because once he died, his spirit was going to walk the earth. And having done a little bit of research in regard to the Nephilim, who were the, who I believe were fallen angels who came upon the daughters of man, and I do believe the daughters of a man was specifically Cain's lineage, because Seth's lineage from Adam began to call upon the Lord and the Creator, so they went a whole different direction, of which Noah was a direct descendant of that perfect generation. His generations were perfect. Cain's were not. And I believe that the Cain lineage, of course, upsetting some people when I say this, that Cain was actually the son of Satan, that his lineage is also, again, the weakest link, and that they actually allow the women mated with these fallen angels that followed Lucifer when he was thrown out of heaven. They followed into having relationships and having children, and that those Nephilim really are the ones that became, you know, their children became the giants, and they were the watchers of mankind. And we see through the Bible how the watcher is actually described different than the holy ones, and you can see that in the book of Daniel, where Daniel describes Nebuchadnezzar's great dream of a fallen one and a holy one and a watcher coming down. And if it was both angels, why didn't he call both of them holy ones? Now, we know that over in the New Testament, when Mary goes to say that she's conceived, the Bible calls him a holy thing. It's the only time that the Bible ever uses a different terminology.
Okay.
Jesus is actually called a holy thing in the King James Version.
So,
meaning that he was a little bit different, and we know that the Lord, of course, was made different. He was a little bit lower than the angels. And so I find it very interesting that there were something in Daniel that was happening that was considered a holy one coming down and a watcher coming down. And I do believe that the watchers were, in fact, those fallen beings. And so I believe that those watchers were the ones who came upon the daughters of man and actually had sexual relationships in some form or fashion.
Right.
Whether that be through removal of an egg and a type of cloning or hybridization that might have been going on. But, you know, there definitely was a being created, and that created being is talked about in the Bible as a giant. And we do know that those giants exist because we do have, you know, we have some bones and some archaeological evidence that those creatures existed. So if you're going to believe the Bible, you have to believe that there was a hybrid type of human. And, of course, the Bible is very specific about, even after the flood, that this remnant continued. And when Moses was leading the Israelites back to the Promised Land from their captivity in Egypt, after they crossed the Red Sea and went into the wilderness, you know, time and time again, the Lord spoke to Moses and told him to keep his people away from those tribes. And they described Og as having six fingers on each hand and six toes on each feet. And, you know, he was a humongous being. So, you know, you can't discredit it. I mean, even little King David, who became King David, he killed Goliath. And we know the massiveness of that kill and what it meant for King David. Mm-hmm. So we can't discredit that there were not, in fact, another type of being on this earth that looked human and that was called a giant.
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, I just want to ask you a little bit about that. And you mentioned the line of Cain, of course, that this might go back to those days. What I guess also that we're kind of leading up towards here is what I'm guessing at is that the possibility that these the line of either the Nephilim or of Cain are alive and still going at it today. Is that a correct assessment, do you think?
Yes, and I think a lot of people do not really realize how, you know, if you do the research, and I will tell you, you really do have to dig pretty deep to understand all this, and it has to be someone that you're pretty ground in trying to find the truth, because there is a lot of deception that is out there, and there's a lot of people guessing at things, you know, without really trying to search deeply and come to the truth of it. But I do believe that, you know, we are seeing, or I am seeing through my research, that that this particular lineage has continued, and like I say, it's been a little bit more watered down, because any time that you know, you think about, we even have people that end up with a, you know, huge structure, you know, over 7 feet, 8 feet, you know, now you know that there has to be a genetic link somewhere to have picked up on those particular DNA abnormalities or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I do believe that there is still evidence that those the giants were here in probably someone's DNA that would show that. The question being is, how much of the fallen angels are still having relationships with women?
Mm-hmm.
And that is an area that I find most interesting, because of my consulting and research in the UFO phenomena, especially when we talk about alien abductions.
Really? No.
And a lot of people get really nervous about that, and I'm like, you know, I think this particular problem has been going on a very, very, very long time.
Mm-hmm.
It's changed names. We've gone from, you know, Nephilim to, we've gone to Watchers, and we've gone to fairies, and now we're kind of into, like, aliens and that kind of thing. So
sure,
I really think it's all the same kind of thing, except different terminology over the course of our history as humans on this earth.
Right.
Because if you really look at the similarities of fallen angels, you know, even in some of the books like Enoch that are, you know, are not a part of the Bible, that even in those books it specifically states that these fallen angels were shapeshifters and that they smelled like sulfur.
Really?
And most all of the characteristics that you see in the alien abduction and in the UFO phenomena, most of the time there is the smell of sulfur.
Sure.
I mean,
sure.
that is like a commonality that runs through the majority of people who really have these experiences. And shape-shifting, you know, to make someone look or make a image appear before you as it's a friendly alien or a friendly being that's trying to tell you something, this crossing over and that kind of thing, it's not that you cannot do those things, because the Bible specifically says that there were oracles, and that these oracles would actually go to these points on the earth, and I describe that in my research as being like crossroads or nodes of the magnetic structures that circle our earth.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And that in those areas are typically underground water sites, and that if you put yourself into a state of vibration, that you do have within your brain a little gland that's called a pineal gland.
Now, sure.
A lot of people have, you know, speculated that that is the seat of the soul, that there's a lot of things, but, you know, you've got your Eastern kind of religions that promote the yoga, the kundalini, those kind of things, the raise the serpent up and that kind of stuff.
Sure.
But it's a vibratory rate, a frequency upon the body. And so if you put yourself in that position, you allow yourself to be opened up, and I believe that there are certain areas of the earth that will make that possible. The problem is that in the research that I've done, is that this light being, this angel that comes to you, you have to remember that, you know, the Bible specifically says that that is an angel of light.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we know that Satan has the power of the air and that kind of things. And most of the information that, even in the alien abduction, when they experience these things, if they're using, you know, I go into my work about DMT, which is a substance that can be taken, or either atomic gold,
monatomic gold, yeah.
Yes, that it can actually cause the pineal gland to become very responsive to, and doctors try to say maybe a hallucination. The problem that I have with it being a hallucination is the fact that most times the things that people experience in these states are very identical. And it would be like you and I, Henrik, having the same dream every night. I mean, how close a chance would that be unless we knew each other real well and maybe had experienced some of the same things?
Sure, sure.
But the type of experiences that most of these people have are very true to the same, theme surrounding them. And so it does concern me that we see that when in the Bible, if people went to do these kinds of things and try to talk to the other side, for, let's say, the Bible tells us that there's a great gulf and we cannot make contact with people who we believe are past, friends, family, or whatever.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The problem is that these spirits in that dimension can manifest themselves to look like, let's say, your mother or your father or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the theme that is most pronounced in these things are very much grounded in theosophy, which
okay.
is the worship of nature. And in theosophy, we look at all these little things that go on that have been just put all over these monolithic buildings around the world that have sat on these, what I call oracle sites, in strategic positions, in pyramids, even built on the Templars, Gothic cathedrals.
So you're saying that there are certain points here that are kind of being used by the powers that be, so to speak, in order to help to deceive people that are within these areas for religious purposes or whatever.
Yes, I really do believe that it's in a deception that's going on. And it's like you and I, if we knew that we could go down to this person and say, you know, my mom and dad have passed, I really want to hear from them. It would be a great thing. I would love to be able to do that. I mean, I would just love that opportunity. But we know that when that happened in the Bible with Saul, you know, he was very favored in God's eyes. And when he sought to the oracle to talk with Samuel, who was deceased, then, of course, he lost his kingdom. God told him, don't mess with these spirits, because what you're doing is you're messing with a spirit. You're not dealing with a person, because there's such a great gulf between when we leave our bodies in another dimension. And so it really does concern me that sometimes when I hear people say, well, I was able to talk with my mother, or I was able to talk, if what you were able to get from them, if it was, you know, to save the earth and you know, do these things that are going to help mankind by turning everything green,
mm-hmm.
It's not that we shouldn't look after the earth. I'm totally for looking after the earth.
Sure.
But I'm trying to say that the central theme is this. Satan knows that once the gig is up, it's over. His only way of staying in power and using us as human beings to his pleasure is to keep Earth going.
Okay.
The moment that the Creator decides, I've had enough, you know, I'm going to send Jesus back, second coming, then according to the Bible, that, you know, Satan's kind of like, he's had his day.
So,
everything in perspective, it's important for us to be able to want to live forever in the flesh. And this goes back to what I was telling you about Gilgamesh. He was searching for life.
Are you also saying here that we are in a period now when I would refer to it then as the experiment planet Earth are going to end or wrap up in some way, but and what we're seeing is a natural decline or I guess you would say the will of God are ending the planet Earth as we know it, and Lucifer or Satan then is trying to maintain the planet in order so he can sustain himself and the other ones who are with him. Is that what you're saying here?
Yes, because if you do the research, especially on the giants, when they died, they were a hybrid, and their bodies were not able, they're the spirit side of them, anything that's made with flesh between a person and, if it was person and a fallen angel, that flesh has got that spirit in it. But because it was fallen, it can never go to heaven. It's a fallen spirit. So
okay.
it's bound to the earth. It has to roam the earth. It's been here since those things started happening. That was what Jesus cast out when he was here. And that's what talked to Jesus. And that's what ran into the pigs. And the pigs went running in the water and drowned themselves.
Sure of her.
So
yeah.
Those kinds of, those demons are terrestrial spirits. They are born on this earth. They are captivated here on this earth. So at the moment that any of that changes, they have nowhere else to, you know, go or be a part of or whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So when I was saying back to the Epic of Gilgamesh, Gilgamesh was actually searching from what I believe was the true nature or the divine spark that would allow flesh to live forever.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that is where biotechnology, and I go into that in my research.
Mm-hmm.
All this I'm talking about is in my research. But
sure.
It's being able to take the DNA structure and being able to find the defects in the DNA such that we can either elongate a cell's telomeres, which is, you know, it can only divide and slough itself so many times as human beings, and then it completely dies. That's why we eventually die. If we can find a way to arrest that or to plug on the DNA strand those areas that are deficient by finding the divine spark, then we can make flesh live forever.
Sure.
And this particular theme has run really from the very beginning of time. When Cain killed Abel, if you'll notice in the Bible, it says that God says that Abel's blood cried out to him. So the blood apparently has a way of communication much different than what we've ever probably imagined. And I believe that right now the biochemists are looking at how to take and whatever our life force is, be able to make it such that flesh can live forever. If you look back at some of the secret societies, especially the Rosicrucians,
mm-hmm.
the intent was for their Christian the guy that headed that up was, of course, German, and he is said to, his flesh to still be alive, kept secret.
Mm-hmm.
But that he's sealed in such a way that the flesh actually is able to maintain itself. And this is no different than what I believe, and I do mention this in my book about cancer, that you, the first tumor that was ever taken out of a woman is still alive today. And it's fed by, you know, these proteins in a petri dish. If you get the right amount of hormones, proteins, the things to feed tissue, you can keep tissue alive indefinitely, stay alive. The problem is how do we keep human beings alive? And having looked at some of the history of Hitler, I find his underground scientific work, if you can get your hands on a little bit of that, involved a lot of the genetics and testing to try to what he was wanting to make was the perfect Aryan race.
Sure.
But his intent was to live forever. It's still the central theme.
Mm-hmm.
And so through the secret societies that have manifested themselves all the way through today with what we call the Illuminati and what I would say the big boys that rule internationally, they're not concerned about countries. They're looking at an international one-world order. And, their intent is to live in the flesh, not pass on to the next generation.
Sure.
It's kind of like they want to stay here in the here and now. And so the intent for those people have always been, how do I keep flesh alive? And the Bible, interesting enough, does tell us in Revelation that there will be a day when men will want to die, and death, they cannot find it.
You know, to kind of pick up a little bit here on what you're talking about, I don't know if you are familiar with the longevity research that a guy named Aubrey de Grey is performing at a foundation that actually is called the Methuselah Foundation. And, you know, again, going back to the Bible, that's the oldest, as far as they know, that they've counted character in the Bible. Up to around 1,000 years, I think, he lived. And
yes.
We've been doing a short film about actually these kind of areas, how actually potentially secret societies or you know, the elite are actually, you know, involved in this kind of research to extend their lives and longevity and so forth. But what we noticed when we did this short film was that there is a lot of biblical terminology and a lot of biblical even symbolism used by these, you know, big, basically, companies, biogenetic companies or what have you. And I'm kind of wondering why they would use this kind of, symbolism. Any ideas or theories about things like that?
Yes, it's interesting enough that there was a lot of terminology, as above, so below. That has been a little thing, a theme that's run through history. And it is to, and I believe, the satanic lineage is to create heaven on earth. It's to also, like, what Satan told Adam and Eve, you know, you eat of the free and you can be the tree and you can be like gods, and that you will not die. And I think he knew that if he could ever give us the technology, that mankind would actually want to live in the flesh and never want to die. And so I do believe that he is trying to make heaven on earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so his intent is to use biblical terminology, and this, it goes through the Masonic and Freemasonry and Illuminati, all those Rosharians, Templars, they all used terminology from the Bible. And the intent, again, is a deceptive play. It's like a double speak.
Mm-hmm.
To you and I, if we are Christians, it means one thing, but to those that are what they call have eyes to see, they know that this terminology or these symbols mean this versus that. And if you do a lot of research on these symbols, you find out that very much are being used in broad daylight to speak one language to one thing and another language to another. If you're familiar with the language of birds, then you understand what I'm saying. Now, we've got the white and black birds in the same picture, and I see the white and you see the black, but we're all looking at the same picture.
Sure, sure.
You understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
So So the terminology is being done so that it's not, you don't think anything about it.
Hmm.
Only those that are initiated into the, what I call white or black art,
mm-hmm.
are
mm-hmm.
aware of the doublespeak that goes on right before our eyes.
You know, one thing that kind of feels to be kind of difficult to determine at this point with what you have been talking about is the true agenda here to actually destroy the planet Earth, or is it to sustain it? What I'm getting at here is the idea that the destruction of the planet itself, to me, seems like a very satanic agenda, and the other way around to sustain it would be favorable for God. But what do you think about an idea like that? Do you think that that is in reverse, or what do you think
about
it?
Well, you know, I guess because I've studied it, I see the need for mankind's desire to live forever. And the problem with that is a satanic agenda to avoid judgment. The intent of the secret society in alchemy to perfect the stone, the philosopher's stone, that kind of thing, is to perfect the human being such that if we knew today that we would never die and never face the judgment of God, would we want to live forever? Of course, yes. I don't know very many people that say, you know, I can run down here and take a shot and I can live forever and never be sick or whatever. Most people would jump at the opportunity.
Well, let me tell you that to live forever, if you really think about that and really ponder the idea, I think that what these people are creating for themselves actually is a hell.
Exactly.
That's my viewpoint. To live forever on this planet and never die, I mean, that to me is actually there. So in a way, I see what you're saying, but I guess I would go from it from another angle and saying that they are actually creating for themselves, unbeknownst to themselves, of course, that they are going to live in a kind of hellish scenario because they're never going to pass on or die or you know, leave the body, basically.
Right. And I think that's where the deception has come in to all of this, and that's a little bit of spark going through these particular organizations throughout history, is to find that particular divine spark that will allow that to occur. And, you know, from all that led me to understanding what cloning would be about.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, when I first started doing research on cloning was many years before it was ever even brought up into the public eye.
Okay.
My first book was in 1999 called Antichrist, the Cloned Image of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had been doing research before that for a good number of years. So, you know, I really surprised a lot of people, but once, you know, we've gotten to the point we are now, where recently it was announced, you know, here in the United States that we had a doctor who actually cloned himself from his skin cells.
Sure, yeah. Yeah.
That was, you know, released to the public. And then, of course, you know, Dolly being cloned from the sheep over there in Switzerland.
No, that was actually in Scotland.
I mean, Scotland.
Sure.
If you think about those kinds of things and then you do a little research back into Hitler's underground scientists, they were already doing that. Cloning is not a major issue. A lot of people think this is like a major science thing that
sure.
you have to have like certain kinds of things to be able to do it.
Yeah.
Cloning is not a hard technique at all. So, you know, the fact that that was already being messed around with and trying to identify different genetic structures and things like that, that's been going on a while. The intent is to be able to make it live and function. And even more recently, though, I have had some research come across my desk that, you know, the ability to take the mind like a computer and download it and then clone the body and then reintroduce that your mind or knowledge back into that body is one of those things that, you know, we think, well, that could have been a little bit of science fiction or whatever, but this day and time with the technology, especially nanotechnology and all the things that are out there,
yeah.
the capability of doing that. The only thing is that, again, once you clone a body, that's a whole different process. And that cloning is a tissue that's already existed with a spirit in it, which would be, if it was you know, my skin cells and my spirit is in my body. But if I was to clone myself, then that clone would not have that spirit within it, because it is for man to die only one time.
So
I fully believe that that is the technology that has been running through history, the spark of the divine, to try to find how you can make a body live and have it open. In other words, a vehicle for a person, spiritual person, or
sure.
spiritual being, I should say.
An entity type.
To be able to live in without having to fight a spirit. Again, like we were talking earlier, that if you've got to fight against something, you don't really own that body.
Sure.
You know, it's like your car. If you've got somebody else that owns the car, they can come get it. But if you own the car, you own the car. You know, do you understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
That's where my research led me in the very beginning, back in 1999, to try to find, well, if you could clone a body, that would be the perfect vehicle for Satan to ride in. And, of course, looking back through some of the Jewish Talmud and things like that, I was able to find where there are documents of people who actually, what they said, were beasts of the field. They didn't have a nesma. In other words, they didn't have a spirit that's actually in the history and in the literature. And once I was able to understand that, I'm like, okay, then we're talking about, what do they call those things? They call them beasts. What does the Book of Revelations call Antichrist? The beast.
Sure.
So I'm pretty sure that the cloned being will be a beast, because that's all the thing that Satan can actually inhabit. He can't create it, so it has to be something, a vehicle he can ride in, and it cannot be some mechanical thing, because if it's mechanical, it's not going to work right.
See what you mean,
like
see what you mean.
Else, like we were worried about computers going down if we had bad weather. He can't rely on computers. He's got to rely on something that will sustain his stuff, and if you do the research back and you understand how to keep tissue alive and how the Talmud spoke of these beasts of the field and the golem and how they were created, kind of like a Frankenstein. And I always believed the story of Frankenstein was kind of like a introduction to this understanding of what it's like to have a being without a soul.
Sure,
and
sure.
Created in a laboratory.
Kind of
like a introduction to that.
Yeah.
But anyway, the ability for this cloned image to be out there before the public, then for him to ride in that clone image, even still, he would have the powers, because he has power of the air, so he would be able to do, you know, miraculous works or whatever. So when I was doing this research in my earlier book, I actually was going down the highway and had been reading a bunch of things, and all of a sudden I was like, well, you know, I wonder who in the world, if I could clone someone, I would want to clone. Who could I bring back that I felt like, you know, I'd like to meet or whatever?
Elvis.
Hit me. I could bring back anybody, bring back Jesus Christ.
Mm.
The reason I would was because he was the Son of God. He would have the divine spark, have the answer to everything. He would be the person I'd want.
Mm.
And I just stopped my car on the side of the road, and my grandmother, who is passed now, looked at me very funny. And I said, I know how Satan's going to do what he's going to do at the end of time. And she just sat there and looked at me like, what? And I said, I realize now, if I can just figure out how he's going to do it. Well, interesting enough, I had come across the Shroud of Turin. And it was very, very interesting to me. And I did a lot of research on that. I've read about everything that's ever been written on the, like what I say, in the news media and then media and then under the news media.
See what you mean.
Underground kind of things.
Sure.
And was able to find out, you know, of course, in 1968, that the Stirp Committee, which was a committee that went in to do study on that, took some samples, and they were able to actually process some DNA and prove it was a man and that kind of thing. And so then I started looking again at the cloning issue, and can we take tissue from those samples, and how do we know that it's Jesus' blood and those kind of things. And so I did some little research back into some of the Nazi Hitler days, and we look at, who was he trying to get rid of? He was trying to get rid of the Hebraic lineages. So he had accessibility to Hebraic, true Hebraic, 12 tribes, blood tissues. And so he was probably able to identify in his laboratories what things were very true to the Hebraic race before even the Jews became known as Jews, because not all all Jews are really true, you know, mother, father lineage from Abraham.
Are you talking about the Sephardic and Ashkenazi lines now? Or?
Right. In other words, you know, when they were captive, made captives to the Babylonians, then, you know, the women, of course, had children by the Babylonians and that kind of thing. But when they came back into Israel and that area, they all encompassed everybody and called them Jew, whether they were really what I would call half or whole,
of
lineage. So I think that when our buddy Hitler was doing these tests and things, that he was trying to identify those particular blood lineages. And the reason being is because it is said that he owned the spear of destiny.
Sure,
and
that
spear was the one that pierced Jesus' side, and he was had any capability of removing anything from that spear, then I'm sure he was trying to find any piece of drop of blood he could get. And knowing that the Knights Templar secured the Shroud of Turin, it's called the Cloth of Edessa, it was actually stolen right after the temple and all burned and some of the things were destroyed right after Christ died and rose again, then you kind of know that the Templars brought that cloth through history. And in their Grail lore, I believe that was the Grail, that's the cup that owns the blood, the divine blood, and kind of like the Arthurian, you know, legends of King Arthur, that blood's going to live again.
Sure.
It's their big thing, we're going to make this blood live again.
So you're saying here that potentially they took samples from the Spear of Destiny that pierced the side of Jesus, and they took this some blood samples from this and potentially try to clone Jesus again?
I think that that's what they are trying to do, or they did do. My research talks about that. But I believe that it all started with the Knights Templar and their accessibility to the things that they had. And then, of course, with Hitler, he was very engrossed in theosophy and all the secret society.
Sure. Hey, listen, Dr. Joy, we have to round things up for this first segment here. We're running out of time quickly. And I do want to ask you if you have time for us to continue a little bit in our subscriber section, because I want to dive into a little bit more about the science and technology aspects that you briefly touched upon. What do you say about that?
Yes, I would love to. Thank you so much, Henrik.
You know, what I want to do, though, here before we round things off is to leave the floor open to you in the last few minutes here so you can mention your website, and for people who are interested in this kind of material that you have been talking about and potentially want to get a copy of the book and learn more, how they can go about doing that.
Okay, you can go to my website, which is www.drjoye, and it's spelled DRJOYE, that's joy with an E, .com. And on that will be the link to be able to purchase my book, either one of the books, either Antichrist or Eden, that we're both talking about today. They have links to be able to purchase those. And, of course, you can get Eden also on, like, Amazon.com, you know, around the world, wherever you may live. And then on that particular website is also my email address. And I encourage anyone that has questions to email me. And if you do read my research and you have questions, once you start reading my research, I would like to hear from you so that I can give you additional sources or maybe clarify something if you're not familiar with it that will help you understand it better. So I'm very open to emails, and like I say, my email address is there on the website at www.drjoye.com.
There we go. Excellent. Okay, so Dr. Joy and I are going to take a little short break right here, but we're going to continue talking more in our subscriber section about the biotech aspect to this, the science, technology, and pick up on a little bit more about the cloning issue of Jesus, of course, very interesting. And I'm going to ask a little bit more about the Merovingian line and see what is going on with that today. So stay tuned, and subscribers, we'll see you on the other side of the break. So again, for this segment, thank you very much for coming on, Dr. Joy.
Thank you.